It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into Extra Innings here on the Sports Objective. And the Pirates had a big series for Memphis. Get 2 out of 3. I know we're a little disappointed by yesterday. Overall, though, a very good series, very good season. And with us right now, we have Kyle from LaGrange Barber. What's up, dude?
What's going on, David?
Glad to be with you here on a Sunday. And hey, Bubba, what's up, man?
Good morning, guys.
And with us right now, the man that's got more frequent flyer miles than any other guy I know. That's Corey Glore, the play-by-play voice of the EC Baseball Pirates. What's up, dude?
I looked at my account today, and the number is staggering. So, yeah, I'm doing all right. How are you guys?
Well, I guess after you can have one heck of a vacation, maybe in July or August, once to deep June with the baseball team.
Yeah, I'd be more than okay with that, and I'd be more than okay with delaying that vacation to after 4th of July.
Yeah, so about a lovely vacation to Omaha before then.
When you take a look at this series, taking 2 out of 3, the Pirates set the American Conference record, finished the year 20-4 in league play, and of course 42-13 overall. And last I checked, we had held steady in the RPI as Arkansas and maybe another team or two behind us had lost.
Yeah, not a lot changed RPI. Frankly, not a lot changed for this team over the weekend. They did what they were supposed to do, what they needed to do. My apologies if you can hear a French PA announcement right now here in Raleigh.
Like to Montreal, perhaps?
Yeah, I think that's going to Paris is my theory there. But, I mean, this team, they won two very different games, because they're kind of a chameleon as a club. There's no one way to beat them. And you kind of saw it all on display over this weekend. And then it was funny, you know, I was talking to a couple of folks yesterday after the game, and their 4 conference losses this year, they've lost by a total of 6 runs, including the one yesterday. So, I mean, it's, you know, yeah, 20-4, that's one unbelievable mark. And you could say, you know, in all 4 of them in some capacity, they had opportunities to actually switch those into wins. Certainly yesterday they did with the winning run at second, but 20-4, now they're atop the American history books for most wins in a season, and they did it kind of how they've done it all year long. Offense early, pitching in the middle game, and then they are trying to scratch and claw their way back into yesterday's and nearly pulled it off.
Corey, I know you're tight on time as you're at RDU, as you've referenced, about to head down to Clearwater. So let's go ahead and dive into things and take a look at game 1, the story from that game. The Pirates jumped on the Tigers early, 4 in the first, I think it was 9 in the third, and then 4 more in the fifth. So they had that commanding 17-0 lead. And then also, bigger story is Jake Agnos, 5 shutout innings, 3 hits, and 10 Ks. Now he has 124 on the season, which is not only an East Carolina record, but also a record for the American.
Yeah, I mean, it just, and now 31 straight scoreless innings, and he again had to kind of navigate through a couple of hiccups on Thursday. But when you have, you know, a 13-0 lead to work with, like you tend to lose attention a little bit, and I think that's what happened towards the end of that game for the team as well. When you have such a big lead, it's easy to kind of lose track of the game. But Jake, throughout the course of this season, has never really lost sight of what he's needed to do, not just for this club, but also for himself professionally coming up here in a couple of weeks. And he knows that, you know, there are a lot of eyes on him now, and the only way those are going to continue to be looking in his direction if he goes out and does stuff like what he's done. And so for him to just kind of lock down a very good Memphis offense like he did Thursday night on a day less rest to work with, he had a big lead to work with. And so it allows him to just kind of pitch freely and go about his business, and he was able to do so. He probably could have gone a little deeper, but with a big lead, and who knows when he might need to pitch this week here in Clearwater. You might need him on shorter rest, so why not pull him early and make sure he is fresh and ready to go for whatever the game might be here that he'll pitch this week, and maybe even more games.
on the offensive side of things, the Pirates pounded out 15 hits, led by Jake Washer. He was 3 for 4, drove in 4 runs, had a couple of extra base hits, including his 10th home run. Now he's second on the club behind Spencer Brickhouse, who leads the way with 12. And then you also had a guy like freshman second baseman Connor Norby out of the Winston-Salem area, East Forsyth High School, get his first career home run.
Yeah, I think Jake Washer has flown really under the radar here over the last month. And he might be, I mean, this is very unscientific. The team actually has the metrics and the data on this. He's one of the better guys in this team going opposite way. I mean, a lot of his home runs have gone opposite way, like the Thursday night home run did. And now he's just kind of gone about his business and not getting a ton of attention off of it. I think a big key to what has been a successful year for Jake this year is that he's not catching as much as he did last season. He rotates in with Cadell pretty regularly. Cadell always catches Cooch Maynard, so that means Jake gets the middle game of the weekend off. And so it's a lot less wear and tear on the position that causes the most wear and tear, except for maybe being a pitcher. And so now you're seeing him really surge at the close of the season, like what we've seen. And then Connor Norby getting his first career home run. I get the sense he might see a good amount of Norby here in the coming days with the injury to Hoover. And so for him to start swinging the bat pretty well, he had a base hit yesterday, drove in a run. If you can start getting production from guys that you maybe haven't leaned on during the course of the year, Chandler Jenkins, another one who's come on here pretty large over the last week, then you're going to like, even if you're dealing with an injury or two, you're going to like how your lineup produces, because you have guys that have kind of bought in, even though they haven't played a lot, and now they're getting their chance and they're coming through.
Moving on to game two, a much different ball game. It was a game that was pretty nip and tuck. Pirates ended up winning 5-3. Terrific outing by Jake Cooch Maynard and garnered his 6th victory of the season. Went 7 1/3. And then, so talk a little bit about Jake's performance.
He just knows how to pitch. We talked about it during the broadcast, even if things are going a little bit haywire on him, and they were at times, he can't be perfect every single time out like we have seen from him. But I mean, his fastball has some life at 85, but he's not afraid to challenge you with it. And then he supports it with the best changeup on this team and maybe the best in this conference. And that just leaves you baffled if you're a hitter. And then to kind of counterbalance that with power out of the bullpen, like the Pirates did on Friday, there's no real ability for a team to feel comfortable when you have Cooch Maynard starting and everything's just dancing and moving like he was able to get it going against the Tigers. And then you just bring out, Heat right after that. So it's a great mix that this team can put together when Jake's on the mound, because he's so different than everybody else, and he knows how to throw it, and he knows how to do it, and that's what has kind of vaulted him into a little bit of stardom this year, is that it's in between the years first. He knows how to command and advance, and he says, all right, here's my stuff at 85, and you're not going to hit it. He's a gutsy kid. He knows how to throw his arsenal. There's not a lot of guys that have that type of weaponry that know how to contain it. He's one of them, and that's why this team has really kind of developed 2 aces during the course of the year.
One of the big differences in game two in a tight ball game like that, and really over the course of the weekend, was the Pirates playing error-free baseball in game three, which we'll get to here in a minute. There were a couple plays the Pirates probably should have made that didn't officially go down as errors. But, as I said, officially error-free baseball on the weekend, and Memphis committed 4. So that was crucial in a 2-run ball game.
Yeah, that's been part of Memphis's season. And they actually have a pretty loaded group on the infield, especially, and a pretty rock-solid group. But there have been moments during the course of the year where suddenly they just kind of, just out of the blue, blunder their way through an inning. And we saw that certainly on Friday, and then it nearly happened to open up the door fully yesterday. And that's the sign of that's why Memphis is sitting 7th and the Pirates are sitting 1st. One of the many reasons is because after kind of a rugged start to the year, when the Pirates are still sorting out the pieces to what they had, defensively, they're as good as anybody in this league now, that everyone knows what they need to do. Everyone knows the role, and everyone trusts each other to do their role. And I think part of it, guys, is when you have pitchers like Kuchman or like Smith that thrive on contact, it keeps the defense engaged when they're out there. And so they know that not necessarily they need to make the big play, they just need to do their right position. They need to make the correct decision. And that's why you're seeing a defense that doesn't panic more often than not. They know what they need to do, and that's been a little bit of a difference between them and a team like Memphis this year.
Before we move on to game three, I wanted to mention the performance that Thomas Francisco had at the plate. I talked about how in game one, Jake Washer had three hits, and then Francisco did the same thing in game two.
I mean, Francisco had the best weekend of anybody on this team, and now he's kind of put himself in a spot where you're going to see him pretty regularly, I feel, starting Tuesday. I mean, that was a breakout weekend for him, and it's not going to get kind of the accolades because it's senior day on Friday. It was the last home weekend of the year. A lot of milestones were hit, but, you know, if you're kind of glimpsing a little bit forward into 2020 and you saw what Francisco did this weekend and you're saying, oh, yeah, I mean, that's what's coming at first base. He was awesome, and it didn't matter if it was a lefty or a righty that he was seeing. He was driving the ball. He found open spots, and he came through in some massive, massive spots. He had a hell of a weekend, and for a guy that's just kind of been lurking in the shadows a little bit, been a DH here or there, come up with some home runs during the course of his freshman year, but he's never had a complete weekend like that. Now you got a guy, again, this goes back to the Connor Norby, the Chandler Jenkins chat.
Look at the game.
If you get stuff from him, then you're set.
Sorry about that, Corey. I had lost you there for a moment. I thought you were finished. But moving on to game three, as you take a look at yesterday's game, Tyler Smith really struggled with his command there in the first, and the Tigers loaded the bases, only getting one ball out of the infield, but then they had a couple of hard hits after that, and then also played the third run when the Pirates threw down the second there on a delayed steal.
Yeah, it was a groggy first inning for all involved, and they were able to get back into it and take the lead with Alec at the plate. But you could kind of sense that, I mean, that first inning kind of set the tone for what that game was going to be. There was a lot of two-out production by Memphis, 7 of their 10 runs or with two outs in that game, including that third run that they scored in the first. You could just kind of sense it was a little disjointed to start, and the Pirates are talented enough to rally back from an early deficit like that. They did, but then they didn't get the execution on the mound after that to hold the lead or give them the opportunity to build off the lead. So by the time they were down 5, it became just too tall of a mountain for them to climb.
Yeah, as you referenced, after those a pair of three-run bombs and consecutive innings by the Tigers there in the 5th and the 6th, the Pirates faced that 10-5 deficit. But to their credit, they responded, and you had good performances out of the bullpen by Cam Colmore and Evan Bolivar, which allowed the comeback to nearly happen.
Yeah, it felt it was almost a carbon copy of the loss to Tulane a couple weekends ago, where they fell behind in the middle innings, fell behind pretty large in the middle innings. I think 5 was the deficit they faced against Tulane too, and then just slowly started to chip back in. And you're getting, some production, some power production from a guy like Ryder Giles you're not anticipating. And then you had kind of the part of the lineup up with the winning run at second that you'd want. They just couldn't quite find a way to finish the job. But, as we kind of started off with, in all 4 of the conference losses they've had opportunities to win all 4 of them, even in the 2 games where they were really just commanded by the opposing pitcher. And we may see one of them here coming up on Tuesday. This team's ability to not get down on itself when they're trailing by 5 like they were yesterday and just kind of push their way back in, even if they can't finish it off, that bodes well for what this team will be able to do in postseason.
In addition go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to make a point that was interesting to me is if you think about it, I vividly remember you talking about the UCLA series. I'm going to tie these two in. You understand where I'm going with this. The UCLA series, I remember you saying about how it was five pitches that made the difference between winning that series or sweeping UCLA, and we didn't. We got swept. The only one that we've been swept in all year and the only one we've lost. And you look at yesterday, for example, just a single game, a handful of pitches made the difference between winning that game and losing that game. I mean, we overall, I felt like we played well. It's a sad situation when a few pitches gives up that many runs.
Well, frankly, that's, I mean, to kind of get simplistic with it, that's every game. Even in a 19-10 game, you can look at five, six, even four pitches and say that's where the game went to the Pirates. I mean, those pitches happened early in that game, and then on Saturday they were kind of interspersed throughout that contest. But, that's the sport. That's why it's a unique animal where there's always going to be a moment you look back on at a game and say that's where things turned. And it could be one pitch, it could be one play, it could be a lot of different things. But I mean, you can parse out every single baseball game in a season and break down pitch by pitch and find the turning points. If you can hold them in your hand, how many you get.
So make every pitch count, right?
Yeah, there are, you know, close to 300 pitches thrown in a game, maybe more, depending on how long it goes. And, I mean, you can break it down very, very, you know, minutely as to how many of them have a dramatic say in what happens in a game.
Go ahead, Bubba.
I was just going to say, offensively, leading the way in that comeback, we haven't even talked about the performance of Alec Burleson. Had two home runs yesterday and also another base hit, and just so much energy. I know after he hit the second home run, I believe that made it 10-9, or no, I'm trying to remember what the score was at that point. Maybe 10-8 because of the solo shot. But Burley really was emotional and waving his arms to get the crowd into it.
Yeah, his first home run gave the Pirates the lead, and then his second home run made it a 10-7 game.
Okay.
And then Giles' homer made it 10-8 in the eighth inning. So, I mean, the play of Alec Burleson over the last 3 weeks, I mean, you could with Packard being hampered with an injury, with Brickhouse, you know, being a little bit up and down here of late, and with the injury to Hoover, now, I mean, Alec Burleson has just kind of taken it upon himself to say, we're not changing anything. Nothing's going to be altered about how we play a baseball game here. And he's just gone up there and mashed the ball. And he sprays it to all fields. He is the most valuable piece to this team, in my mind, heading into postseason, because he does so much for you. He can play anywhere. He'll pitch for you. And he is a monster at the plate. So for him to just kind of say, yeah, you know what, we're not done with this game on Saturday, when this team could have easily just started looking forward and getting ready for the conference tournament after they were down 5 in that one, and Memphis would really pretty much just grab the energy of that entire stadium. Alec Burleson kind of said, no, you know what, we're going to keep on going here. And he was ready to go in the bullpen if the Pirates push it to extras yesterday as well. So, I mean, you talked about just kind of the guy that pushes this team forward. It's kind of become number 19 here of late.
You know, that's a really good point about Burley. Another thing that I want to mention, too, speaking of looking ahead, but on Friday night, I went look back over the roster and just thinking about how great of a team we have. And when you look at it, you would think, Dave, we've got so many juniors and seniors, which we do, that are leaving. But the good news is you've got guys like Burley. You've got guys Gavin Williams, I mean, you could go Cooch Maynard, and then you were talking about Thomas Francisco. There's so many great guys that are literally freshmen and sophomores that we tend to forget that we're going to have them for another year or two.
Well, there was a moment in the Thursday game when that game was very well in hand, when you looked across the infield and it was Barbara at third, Giles at short, Norby at second, Francisco at first, and then you had, you know, Washer was still catching, but you had Tadell on the bench ready to go for game two. And then the outfield was Burleson and Jane and I think Whirl or Baker, I forget who was out there, and you're like, oh, this is next year. Like, that's what's what the team's going to probably look like next year. We don't know. I mean, nothing's set in stone with those juniors, but we can presume what will happen for guys like Packard and Brickhouse and Agnos, who's out of the game by this point. And, you know, Jake Washer, we don't know what his future may be as a redshirt junior. He's played well enough to certainly get a look. But when you looked across the field on Thursday, and, you know, Coach Ho and I talked about it a little bit, like, oh, this is what things are going to look like a little bit in 2020, not factoring in the class that's going to come in. But, yeah, I mean, it was a look into, like, what next year is going to be. And it's a pretty talented group that's waiting in the wings next year, too.
Corey, so what's the weather forecast for Clearwater?
Very little, if any, rain dotting the forecast. But it's Florida. That might change. But right now, it seems pretty clean and clear.
Corey, I was going to tell him. I was waiting for – I knew that was going to – somebody was going to mention that, because I was going to say, Corey, I think we should have the crazy schedule again this year so we can win the tournament. What do you think?
I'm sorry, you cut out there a little bit on me. Could you repeat that? Sorry.
Yeah, I was just simply saying, I think we should have that crazy schedule that you love so much last year, because that helped us win the tournament.
Yeah, that was great, Dave. I'm really vouching for 5 games in 5 days and 9 a.m. first pitches on back alley fields. Yeah, let's make sure that happens again.
So the format, double elimination as usual, like we've been playing the last few years, starts on Tuesday, and championship game wraps up Saturday. Is that right?
Championship game Sunday.
Sunday, okay.
Yes, because there's the potential for 4 games needed on Saturday with the bracket scheduled out. And if teams who lose, who make it to the semifinals, if they win that first game on Saturday, then they'll need to play a second game to find the team that loses twice. And so that's why there could be 4 games potentially on Saturday.
How's the mindset of the guys? I mean, are we locked in and focused on this? Or, I mean, I'm assuming we are. That's kind of been their mindset all year, 1 game at a time. But, you know, part of me, while you want to win every damn game, you want to win the conference tournament, and you want to position yourself in the best way possible to be a national seed or a top 8 seed as it is, part of me also wonders if the guys, you know, need a break, come home before regional play.
Well, they'll get about a week off if they run the table here in Clearwater. So there's the break that's coming. Make no mistake, I mean, this has been a season in which they've checked off a bunch of boxes of what they wanted to do, and so far they've accomplished a lot of them. The next one on their list is defending this tournament, which no one's been able to do. And so, no, make no mistake about what they're thinking heading into this week. They got business to tend to here, and you know, if they tend to their business, then that top 8 seed is locked up for sure. I mean,
yeah,
so
yeah.
If that's what they're thinking about, this is the way to do it. So
yeah.
Getting, you know, taking care of Wichita here on Tuesday is the first step to that. And I think it's a little bit helpful. You know, Coach O and I were debating kind of, do you want to see a team you just saw or see a team you saw a long time ago to open up a conference tournament like this? And Coach O kind of said, you'd probably rather see a team you saw a while ago since they don't have a fresher scouting report on you. But I think what is helpful here in the Wichita matchup is that they beat you already once, and they haven't lost to a conference team twice this year. That's what happens when you win every series, and it's very possible they'll see that pitcher who carved them up in Clayton McGinnis if they push him on short rest. So there's another little bit of motivation here. It's like, oh, this is one of 4 teams that beat us. And it could be the pitcher that pitched maybe the best games anyone has all year against us. So there's going to be a pretty strong attack-minded focus coming up here on Tuesday.
And for our listeners who aren't familiar with the format, it's set up just like Omaha. You have 2 double elimination brackets and then the winner-take-all championship, as opposed to, of course, the 3-game championship series in Omaha. But the rest of our bracket, you have number 4, UConn, and number 5, Houston.
Yeah, I think you can. There are 2 sides of the coin on that matchup. That'll be the first game on Tuesday. It's those are arguably, you know, debatable, the 2 best teams behind the Pirates in the conference overall. You can maybe make a case for UCF here of late and the run that they've gone on. But I mean, you're talking about UConn, Houston, ECU, those are the teams that have won this tournament. No one else has. I mean, that's still remaining in the league. And they're all on one side of the bracket, and you will run into one of them assuredly in game two and very possibly later on down the road. You'll have to get through heavy hitters to get to the title game again. So the challenge is stiff for this bracket. On the other side, if you're looking to bolster your resume, you are seeing your best RPI chances in Houston, UConn in this conference to do that. And so it doesn't hurt to have these big boys on your side of the bracket where you know you will see at least one of them and very possibly both of them. And if you can pick up wins against them, then your RPI and all that discussion about, you know, hovering around the national eight seed sort of discussion, now you have another couple extra games to kind of showcase if you're able to see them and get wins over them.
Corey, have you heard any this would have to come, obviously, formally from the athletic department, but have you heard any talk? Last year we had a big NCAA tournament announcement party on Memorial Day at Moa Mushrooms, and all the fans were invited out for. Have you heard anything about that this year?
Stay tuned on that.
Okay.
Something is being put together. They are finalizing details, and when I get the go-ahead, I will let all of you folks know. But something is in the works.
Okay.
I thought it was actually at Kyle's house. Is it your house, Kyle?
Yeah, it's
at Kyle's. Sure. We'll do it. I got a 65-inch TV. We'll do it here.
Okay. Sounds good. Right. Corey, as far as the other teams, are there any teams that, as far as the national seed is concerned, are there any teams for fans to watch out for that would maybe knock us out of that contention?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to come down to this week. I mean, Texas Tech in the Big 12 tournament, they just won the regular season title, and now they will start off their run the tournament. They are hovering around right there. Louisville, Georgia Tech, those are the main horses around the Pirates in terms of national eight seed discussion. So you're going to want to keep an eye on things in Oklahoma City. You're going to want to keep an eye on things in Durham and in Hoover. And then, you know, however the Pac-12 shakes out in their final weekend of the year, UCLA and Stanford are pretty well locked in by this point to a national eight. So it's going to be those four teams by and large that you're going to want to kind of keep one eye on as this week progresses and the conference tournaments start out on Tuesday.
Corey, what's the name of the seafood restaurant there at the ballpark that everybody always talks about?
That'd be Frenchie's.
Frenchie's, is it good?
Here's the thing. It's delicious. Frenchie's has multiple locations in Clearwater, not just at that park, and it is a common, frequent go-to for all who visit Clearwater for this tournament. There are about three or four kind of right by the team hotel, and so I usually wind up hitting it at least twice, maybe three times a week, depending on how long the week goes. They're delicious, fresh grouper, like just remarkable. So, it's good stuff.
Good deal.
And Corey, I remember, I guess it's the year prior to you coming on board, so it was Paul Roper who had this call, but Luke Bolka hit one off Frenchie's.
Yes, I do. I was not on with that, but I have heard legend about that. I have not had a home run into Frenchie's in my time doing this. So I've had Charlie Yorgan hit an absolute bomb to right. But that's the longest home run I've seen, and no one has gone into left field.
One question I have that's on everybody's mind, Corey, so I'll go ahead and ask. Are you concerned at all with I'm being the bad guy, as usually Kyle. Are you concerned any at all about the relief pitching? I know that's a concern I've heard from fans and the stands yesterday, so I wanted to bring that up. Not that I want to be Mr. Negative, but I heard fans complaining yesterday, oh, my God, here we go again.
No, I'm not at that level of, I think, where fans' concern might be. I think it's natural for the bullpen to start getting a little bit worn down by this point. And so, you know, a case like, you know, two-out walks, which were a problem a little bit yesterday, yeah, those are starting to flare up a little bit. I think if and when Sam Lanier comes back into the bullpen, that will alleviate some of this a little bit. They aren't pitching as strongly as they had in the past, but it's still, when you're looking for, I mean, you're still talking about guys that will get strikeouts when they need to get punch outs. And that's the element that this team has that I don't think last year's had, where there was a lot of pitch to contact in the bullpen last year. This year, they're starting to give up a few hits here of late, but they will also get punch outs, and that alleviates a lot of concern with base runners on if you just do that. So, I'm not at a concern level just yet with the bullpen here. This team could probably use a return of Sam Lanier here. I know they were pretty being cautious with him to save him for postseason play, so we'll see if he's back in the fold starting Tuesday. Once he's back, I think things will slot in pretty nicely.
Do you guys have any movie lines? I know that Corey's got to catch a flight here in a matter of minutes, so I want to be aware of that, conscious of that, of your being respectful of your time.
Yeah, I will tell you this, guys. I might actually have to cut you short because we are boarding now. I will have to drop you here. So if you guys want to send me your movie lines,
okay,
I will be more than happy to start
working. I'll give you a creepy one as you get on the plane. This Florida-related from the great band Lynyrd Skynyrd, who died in a plane crash.
Wow.
Freebird.
Okay, I will do that.
All right.
Appreciate
it, Corey.
Thank
you, man.
Have a safe flight.
Thanks, guys.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Well, Bubba, you know, I thought that you, me, and Kyle were like really big ECU baseball fans, but I found out that just like anything else, they're even bigger fans than ourselves, right?
Yeah, Dave, it's hard to believe this is the 15th year of Clark LeClair Stadium, and their fandom certainly goes back beyond that. But anybody that goes out to Clark LeClair, you can't help but notice the megaphone guys in left field. Well, tonight we're going to be talking to the original guys behind the megaphones, and that's, of course, Brian Dilday and Todd Viverette. Guys, welcome into the show.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thanks so much.
Absolutely. We wanted to have you on because I've heard so many people, the baseball experts that have come on the podcast and people that we hear talk about the SEC environment that Clark LeClair has. And I think when I hear that, I think automatically about the jungle. Don't you guys, Bubba and Kyle?
Oh, absolutely.
Kyle, are you there?
Yeah, Dave. Absolutely. The environment at ECU baseball is second to none. And, you know, people compare it to the SEC and the jungle is a big reason for that, going all the way back to the old stadium. I mean, the jungle atmosphere and the atmosphere it creates, you know, out there in the outfield, you know, I don't want to say intimidate the other team, but it certainly creates a colorful atmosphere that gets their attention.
We wanted to have you guys on, and I guess we need to start back with how did the whole idea of the megaphones, how did that get started?
Well, that started with me. This is Brian Dilday, and my wife was at the time, she was running a cheerleading business. She graduated from ECU, and she was a cheerleader at ECU. And so when she started her cheerleading business, one of the members of one of her teams, the parents had gone to a Pirate Club auction, and they bought a megaphone, and it was from the 70s. They brought it on into Corinne. They gave it to my wife. And right before Clark LeClair Stadium was opening up for the Keith LeClair Classic with Michigan, that was going to be the opening day. And I went over there. I was teaching some classes, getting ready to leave that night. And then when I'm leaving, I'm like, okay, because every opening day for baseball is a national holiday in my book. So when I was leaving, I looked in her office, saw that megaphone just sitting there, and I said, you know what? I got to do something different because there's going to be 3,000 people sitting in the stands. You don't have the trees anymore. And I'm like, how are they going to hear us? And so I'm like, I'm going to take this. So I had my wife drop me off at the field that morning. I was walking into the stadium. I had my cooler. I had the megaphone, and I had 2 Bojangles sausage biscuits. So then we were ready to go. When the when the game ended, the Pirates won 2-1. They come out to do their jumps, and they were just like, man, that was awesome. And I was like, really? You liked it? I was like, I was just thinking I'm just going to use it one time. But then they're like, oh, no. The players, all of them are like, you are using that megaphone forever. This is forever it has been.
Wow. That's really cool. I never knew how, honestly, I didn't know how that got started. And so that's one of the things about doing the podcast, guys. We've learned a lot of traditions and former players and things like that. And where did it all begin? And that, so it began at the beginning of Clark LeClair?
Yes, sir. That's correct. And then the birth of all the megaphones, that's another, well, you know, there's always going to be a fun story behind everything. But Todd and I and a bunch, about six, seven others, we went up the state to go to ECU and NC State baseball game. We go to walk in, and I was carrying, I was the only one that had the megaphone at the time. And everybody's like, there's no way you're getting that thing in there. But we get up to the ticket, we get up to the ticket box. And a nice lady was sitting there, and she goes, young man, I don't think you can bring that megaphone in here. I said, don't worry. I called the AD. The AD said it was fine. I mean, now, at the time, Hammers was already being the person I called. And he's like, yeah, man, take that thing on in there.
Oh, gosh.
So we're in the stadium. We go up 3-0. I mean, you know, State being an engineering school, they don't have the largest of stadiums. So you don't necessarily need a megaphone to be heard in there. But I'm on that thing. I mean, it is just echoing off the dorms in the back. The whole, I mean, everybody's just irate. Plus, the Pirates are winning 3-0. So one of the Wake County's finest, one of the sheriffs comes down and he tells me, look, young man, you can't use that anymore. I said, no problem, sir. We don't really need it in here anyway. So I put it down. And then the game kept going on. State ended up coming back and winning the game. Well, after State, when it was getting late in the game, a girl for State comes walking by with a sign that had some nasty little words on it. And I'm like, look, we're down by, like, it was like 11-3. I said, it's okay. I pick up my megaphone and I start yelling at her about the sign. Officer comes straight down to me. He's like, young man, you got to go. And the megaphone's out of here. And so he goes to take it from me. I said, well, sir, it's an antique. And he's like, either way, it's out of here. It'll be at the front waiting for you when you leave. And so I said, all right. After the game ended, we're walking out. I got the megaphone and headed on back to Greenville. Well, 2 days later, on my front porch was a box from UPS. And I get there and I open it up. It was six megaphones. It was from an anonymous Pirate Club donor. And he said, keep doing what you're doing. We saw it when they took your original. We want you to keep yelling, keep streaming. And we had plenty of megaphones to go for you.
Oh, God. That's funny, Brian. I remember that game. I was there. And a lot of Pirates will know Charlie Da Silva because I remember Charlie got quite animated when Wake County's finest, as you alluded to, came down and took the megaphone.
Yes, he did.
Well, where did how does Todd come into the picture as far as the megaphone? Todd, how did you start out?
So one of those six, you know, I got one of those megaphones and I decided, you know, I painted it up, you know, I wanted it to be colorful, so I painted mine, you know, a dark purple with some yellow bands on it, and you know, one of the next Pirate, you know, opening season events that they had, you know, the Meet the Pirates type event. We got signatures from a lot of the players and everything. So, and then, you know, I had been out there since about year 2000, not quite as long as Brian, but I had been out there, you know, kind of learning the sayings and everything, you know, ball one, ball two, meet, and, you know, and, you know, take her out, leave her in. I had those down, but, you know, the getting the megaphones and sharing those with everybody and just, it just kind of amplified everything and just took us to another level.
That's amazing. I tell you what, I was thinking about that yesterday, knowing we had you guys going on there. That had to be, for Memphis, that has to be, or any team for that matter, intimidated. My God, it was 96 degrees at the stadium yesterday, and I was like, I'm sitting there going, I'm a huge fan of the Pirates, and I hear their, you know, like the megaphones. I was like, wow. And they're on the field probably like so miserable, and they're having to deal with that. And I loved it. I loved it.
You guys got a story about a player for an opposing team that you guys have gotten to that he, that, you know, maybe I don't want to say lost it, but got aggravated with you guys?
We've got a couple. There's been a couple of opposing team left fielders that just, they sort of lost it. One of my favorite, now this one was in the early, late 90s, and we're playing Appalachian, and that's actually what during Cliff's year when he was playing, and they were just hitting home, they were bashing them, and the guy's just getting so upset. And we're just, but we didn't, it wasn't with the megaphones. We were just talking to him. And after the final of the series was all over and everything, so the coaches for Appalachian, they came out and we were just talking a little bit. Well, that left fielder came around to, like, run a pole. And Alan's like, yeah, just gave him one last little, he starts screaming at us. The coaches are like, but y'all, you just got to go. Just go. He was a freshman. We had him out there doing pirouettes on one fly ball and range. Now, with the megaphones, there's been many others that have, once again, they either take us two ways. And some of the guys, they will talk back with us. They'll take in the moment and they'll embrace it. And they'll enjoy it, and they love it. We have a great weekend with them. Now, those guys, sometimes they have a little bit too good of a weekend against us, because they are just that they're just having a fun time with it. And then you get the other side of that spectrum where they want to give us a silent treatment. They don't want to listen to us at all. And there's no way you can be there for 27 outs and not hear us talking through the megaphones at you, and eventually some type of play will happen. But I'll never forget Marshall had come to town, and in their left fielder, he was just getting very frustrated. He wanted to just win the game. Well, there was a line drive hit, and he runs up, and he lays out for the ball, and he came up a little bit short. Well, that ball rolled right to our feet. And so he had to get up and run, and the whole time, and we were like, all you wanted to do is catch that ball and show us the ball. You just wanted to show the ball as he's running to us, and you can see at this point he just wants to jump the fence. I mean, he just... But so we ended up, I mean, at that time they were winning by one. I was in the ninth, and we ended up beating them by one because we got two runs in. That was it. Another time we had a guy from A&T. He was not very pleasant with us at all, and we had some choice words too. But
Brian,
we also have a yeah. Go ahead,
Brian. I was gonna say we had a multi-year feud with one of the UNCW players for a while, but I can't think of his name.
Are you going way back, Todd? Are you talking about Timmy Preston?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
Tim Preston.
Yes,
Tim Preston, he printed some stuff off Boneyard Banner and threw it into the jungle.
Well, there's got to be guys that, when you're telling them embrace it, are there like ones that you've created friendships with that they really, you know, like for my personality is I thrive on that kind of stuff. I enjoy it. Like, even if I was a competitor coming in there, I'm the kind of guy that thinks it's funny.
Definitely. The first that always comes to my mind was a guy named Luke from Navy. And he literally played on the wall. Now, this is going back to the Harrington Field. So it wasn't with the megaphones. It was just us doing what we do. And he played there on the wall. Again, we beat them pretty bad that weekend. We swept them. We probably scored 20-some runs, a whole bunch of home runs. But he had a standout weekend. They scored 8 runs the whole weekend. he had six of their RBIs and two home runs. And so, you know, his dad came to town from Atlanta. His dad came out. We grilled out with him. He hung out with us, and he's like, this is the best atmosphere ever. My son, I mean, his son was like, my dad's coming to town. Can he come hang? We're like, of course. And so he came out there, and we just loved having his dad with him. Because, you know, we have that, you definitely have that respect because he's playing for the military, for one. And then the other thing is, we definitely have the respect for the baseball game, but it's also where we're trying to do everything we can to help our team as well. But he's one that definitely comes to mind.
How does I was going to ask you, how does like Coach Godwin and the staff, how do they love the jungle, I imagine?
Very much so. He wishes everybody would come out there with megaphones to get a little rowdy with it. So Chris and I, we'll talk during, because you'll see, he'll give us he'll come out and give us a nice little jump at the end of what we would consider like a big win. For instance, the beginning of every season, when we get our first win, he comes and does a jump. Whenever we get like a conference win, when we took the record in, like, for Memphis, he came out and gave a jump. And so, and he's always embracing it and loving us very much so. And I also had the pleasure of cheering for Cliff when he was a Pirate. And he played with a lot of heart. And he coaches with even more heart, and it's something that you can just, he just has that passion.
You know, guys, I was thinking, I just want to ask a sidebar really quick, and I know Bubba's got some questions, but it just dawned on me tonight, because I knew we had you guys on and how passionate you are. Am I out of line for thinking that if we do go all the way to Omaha, would you guys offer Cliff a really big contract? As we heard rumor, there's always schools that want him, especially in the SEC every year.
Would they personally offer Skip a big or Cliff a big
contract? No, I'm talking about ECU.
No, I wouldn't offer him a damn thing if he got us there, Dave. I'd say, go on about your business. We don't want that.
I know, I'm talking about a dollar. I know that's silly. I'm talking about a dollar amount.
Yes, you offer him what you can afford. I mean, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd have to, you know, see what we could afford, but of course he would be in line for a big raise, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure
like
you guys feel the same way.
I know this. Money doesn't get everything for you. But does he deserve a big contract? Of course.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't think he – I don't – honestly, I mean, we're not the SEC. We don't get that big money. I know if I think Florida's coach is the highest paid – NCAA baseball coach, making about $1.2 million a year. Obviously, we can't afford that. We can't afford that. I mean, but does it make sense for him to get? You know, I mean, if he's making two, you know, over two now. I mean, to get an extra, you know, $50,000 to $100,000 a year. I mean, for what he's doing, and if he, you know, bringing us some national notoriety, yeah, I think. I mean, that's still, you know, fair comparison to, you know, what the basketball program and the football program, obviously they bring in a lot more money, but you know, does he deserve, you know, getting, you know, a 50%, you know, or more raise? Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, and yeah. I would question at this point, does the basketball program really bring in more money except for TV revenue?
That's true.
That's a very good point. Hopefully with the recruiting and all that Dooley and the staff's done, that in the next couple of years we'll see the definitely the fruit of that labor for sure.
Well, you can definitely tell that we're recruiting at a much higher level than where we have been in the last few years and stuff. I mean, the caliber of athlete that Cliff's bringing in is right there. I mean, Packard preseason All-American. And you know what I love? He's still getting those North Carolina kids.
Oh, yeah.
How was Cliff's contract written up? I don't know if you guys know. Bubba, you may know this. What kind of bonus does he get if he does get us to the World Series? I'm assuming there's something in there.
Yeah, there was bonus like for regular season titles and conference tournaments. I just can't remember the dollar amounts. But, yeah, there was definitely stuff for – I'll have to look back over that. I can't remember offhand.
Yeah.
Well, the bonus that I'm going to ask for is to see if Cliff can somehow get us in the next times out there.
Yeah, I tell you what, it's a fun thought to think. You know, I think we really have a legitimate opportunity to make it to Omaha this year, but it's a fun thought to think, you know, what if we do make it to Omaha, and then what if we win the damn thing? And, I mean, I don't know. Do you think we just burn Greenville down? I mean, what do we do? I mean, I can't imagine.
I didn't say that was Kyle from the Grange Barber. We did not.
I mean,
that's a figurative
expression, not right. Literal. But it's I can't imagine the party that would take place if we won the national championship.
And a parade, right?
Oh God, yeah. I think if we just go to Omaha, there'll be a parade. It's been such a goal for so long. But you know, I just think of Coastal. I think of Coastal was in the same boat we were and just couldn't break through to Omaha, and then they do, and the pressure was off. It's like that was their glass ceiling was to get to Omaha, and then once they were there the pressure was off and they just went in and won it.
Yeah, some things as far as Cliff's contract. He's actually making $375,000 right now.
I was gonna say $400,000, yeah.
Yeah, and he's $375,000 now, and then it's going to go up $10,000 for each of the next 4 years or so, and until he gets up to $415,000, and then I'm not sure as far as the incentives, as far as winning a super regional, making an Omaha, or winning a national championship, but you can bet that that's a hefty amount, and then obviously he would have the contract extension and raise and stuff coming on top of that.
It was like season tickets and a whole bunch of stuff. Probably season tickets, kind of like football. There was some stuff in there. But
yeah,
there was the bonuses for the coaches and stuff like that.
I just don't know how much more we could afford to pay him if he did take us to Omaha or did the ultimate and won the national championship. I would think $500,000 would probably be about our max.
I don't know. I mean, I will say this. That's going to be in the modern day times. If we win it, that's the first national championship that we've had in anything. So, whatever
true
you
enough.
Want, give it to them.
And a lot of that can obviously just depend on not only how baseball's obviously doing, but then of course football and men's basketball. If those programs are getting better, like we hope they do in the next few years, then we'll be able to compensate Cliff more fairly.
Yeah, revenue will pick up across the board at football.
No doubt about it.
Start being successful, and then the new TV deal obviously helps with the revenue.
But getting back to kind of the theme of some of the opposing left fielders and how they've handled it down through the years, in addition to Timmy Preston, one that comes to mind, going back to the Harrington Field days, and Brian, you may remember this. You recall when the Pirates played Pace, and they're actually from right there around Syracuse or in Syracuse, New York. They've since dropped down to the Division II ranks, but Pace had a left fielder named Brian DeLuca. Brian DeLuca. Mark DeLuca. But Mark DeLuca, that's what – he absolutely lost his mind when we started getting on him, and somebody said whatever, and he turns around and says, go back to the trailer park and watch a NASCAR race.
Yeah.
And then so the rest of the game, I mean, you can imagine how people got on him. And then so that video that I sent you guys tonight that's on YouTube, that was one that was taken by one of our family friends at that game, and when he was after the game, they were running their sprints, and he was loafing, and his coach was letting him have it, and then that's when you heard the fans saying what they said. So we'll put that on our social media.
Yeah.
But as far as some that have handled it well, KK Chalmers from Memphis a few years ago, he comes to mind. I think he would always come out and speak to you guys, and also I think Trent Britt maybe out in center field. And then another one that comes to mind very recently from this year and then also last year's regional, I think it's where it got started, is Jackson Meadows, who's actually the son of one of my former high school football coaches, Mike Meadows.
Yeah, he was – you know what? It all comes down to you have so many class act baseball players who are out there for the love of the game. Because the one thing that so many people don't understand – baseball, they don't get, like, full scholarships. They're there. Of course, they're trying to make it to the next level to get their money that way. But so many of them, I mean, they're only getting a partial scholarship. There's not a lot of full scholarships handed out. And so, but they're on these teams, and they go. And then when they sign, you're locked in to 3 years, and so you can't go anywhere for that, which it has good and bad things with it. But when they get out there on the field, and we tell them all the time, you know what, we're just here to make you better. That is our job. And if you can handle us, you can go play anywhere. So, you know, one of the teams that always comes to mind is Pepperdine. Pepperdine came out for the Claire series, and they played, we played them, I want to say they played the early game on Friday. We were going to play them the next day, Saturday. Well, when they got done with their early game, they went and got dinner. Next day, another, they came out to the jungle, and we were playing State. And so we're playing State. They're out there with us, cheering them on. And, I mean, we had half their team out there in the jungle, and they were just going crazy with us. And it was a heck of a ball game. And then I want to say it was that same tournament, St. John. It was St. John's, State, Pepperdine, and us. Well, Sunday morning, St. John's and State are playing, and then we were going to play Pepperdine, I guess, on that Sunday afternoon before they get out of town. And I got there early, and it was the parents of the St. John's and State people, and then it was me. And all I did is I was just being an equal opportunity hater for both teams. But I was still pulling more for St. John's than I was for State. Well, next thing I know, ECU police come out there, and they go, look, Vilde, you got about 25 parents up there ready to come out here and break your megaphone and take you down. So you know what they did? They told me I had to come out here and stand behind you while you are cheering on at this game where we're not even playing in. And he said, sir, the only thing I ask is you just make me laugh. Well, you know, I did everything I could to make him laugh. And I mean, he could eat a few more jelly donuts that day because he laughed a whole lot.
have you guys ever got a, you know, over the years, we've had a lot of different coaches and administrators. Have you guys ever got a negative reaction from any ECU coaches or administrators?
Well, just last year we were in the we get some bless your hearts, because after the Carolina game, when we won that game and the ball bounced over the fence for the ground rule double when their left fielder missed it, the Daily Reflector had a great picture. He's running straight into the fence, and we're just sitting there yelling. But if you'll notice in the picture, all of us backed up from the fence. Once again, we love cheering on our players, but we're not going to disrespect the game by interfering in the game. And so we're all still yelling at him, but nothing is on the field anymore. And in the paper, it said, bless your heart to those guys that are yelling at that poor Carolina fan, that poor Carolina player. And, one day you might have a kid or something that's in that situation.
Oh, my God.
But I said, I just took that as a, all right, you can't make everybody happy. But once again, we did win that ball game.
That's what I tell you, Brian. One of the lines that really comes to mind, just thinking about some of the things, I mean, obviously, I mean, you can only imagine the stuff that you guys have said down through the years that you just referenced. But a couple of the ones that for some reason kind of stuck in my head, back, I guess it was maybe like 2006, we were playing NC State. So it was the first year or two of the Billy Godwin era. And Adam Witter absolutely mashed a ball to right field, well out onto the Cliffmore practice facility. And you were asking the left fielder from NC State if he got that flight number. And then another one was we're playing Marist, and not a particularly large crowd that day, but that's what Marist only had, like two hits in the eighth inning. And you said, if you're in the Marist dugout and you have a hit, please raise your hand. or actually, it was the other way around. If you don't have a hit, please raise your hand, because you said let's go, guys. Lots of hands should be going up. But no. Anytime you're out there, it's always good times, and that's one of the things. What you said just a moment ago, as far as respecting the game. You obviously give those guys a tough time, but I've always respected the way y'all keep it clean, and there's no cussing, nothing like that. And if you see that going on, y'all do a good job of policing it.
Yes, sir. That's always been something that we have always tried to do. We police the area, and we tell young people when they come out there and they start using bad words, they're like, buddy, you're here to get a college education. Use some of those words that you're learning in class and educate yourself and understand how baseball is played, and just talk to them about the game. Go watch a baseball movie. There's a bunch of one-liners from any baseball movie out there.
Yeah, no doubt. And the Natural is 35 years old. I can't believe that it's one of my favorite, if not my favorite, baseball movie. And it's hard to believe. I think last week, 35 years old.
Another memory that came to mind was, I guess it was last year, or no, 2 years ago, when we were playing Charlotte in Greenville, and one of the Charlotte parents, or maybe it was actually a former player who was there to watch it, he was over between the end of the stadium and the Pirate bullpen, watching apparently with a Pirate friend of his, and the guy was bald, and it may not even been one of you guys, but some Pirate out there in Leftville was letting him have it and calling him Mr. Clean. and Mr. Clean got interjected into the one-up, one-down routine.
Yeah.
And so it was pretty funny. So he didn't take to it too well and started hollering back.
People that take themselves too seriously, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you got to think, once again, baseball is fun. It is a game. You want to go out there for the love of the game and enjoy it. Enjoy yourself. And once it's just amazing how good our team, the other players, I mean, you always want a good competitive game with each other. I mean, and we just try to do what we can to give ECU a little bit of an edge.
Brian, I wanted to ask you, you and Todd, are you the Megaphone guys, are you guys equipped to go out to Omaha if we make it, the O word?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've already got a place reserved through Airbnb with a six-bedroom place. And it's all booked up and deposit paid for by one of the other guys, Jared, that tailgates with us and one megaphone with us. And we've already met and kind of preliminarily discussed plans of like travel, how we're going to get there, you know, when we leave, how long we're going to stay, when we're going to come back, and everything like that. So we're ready. I think we're ready to go.
I know Bubba and I talked about, we hadn't talked to Kyle, but we talked about if we could do a road trip, right, guys?
Oh yeah, it'd be fantastic to go to Omaha. Let's see how things play out here at the regionals and supers. But if somehow we take care of business, yeah, it would be a lot of fun to go out to Omaha.
And by the way, guys, we got to hold. And I want to mention too, Bob, I'm sorry, Othello Meadows. We got to have him back on the show. He promised us that he's a huge baseball fan, even though he played basketball for us at ECU. He's from there. He promised us that he's going to have a big party for us there in Omaha, so we got to hold him to it, right?
Definitely.
Oh, no doubt about it. I know, Brian, you know, I think you graduated in 95, correct?
97.
Okay.
I
knew you were there.
He's right there with me. I love it. He's right there with me. I graduated in 95.
I was on the extended stay plan at ECU. I love college. I was a resident advisor. I was an athletic trainer. And, you know, I started in 91, one of the best years ever for Pirate football.
Oh, you're right there with me, yeah.
Yeah, and then I got my undergrad in 97, and I got my master's in 2001. But I knew I was going into teaching, and I'm like, heck, with the teaching salary out there, I'm probably making more money being a resident advisor in the dorm with my room and food all taken care of and free tickets to ECU athletic events. Like, I'm in no rush whatsoever.
Be careful, Bubba's going to get his, like, his doctorate.
Yeah, I'll be like Rodney Dangerfield back to school.
Exactly. You get no respect.
We had many, many years of cheering on our fellow Meadows and stuff with the Pirates. And, that's awesome.
It'll be great to see how with Mike Houston now. You were talking about 91, but I was talking to Jeff Charles. He feels like this is the best combination of coaches we've had as far as the big three sports since the early 90s.
Definitely. Because you would have Dooley. I mean, the funny thing is Dooley would be in that picture, but you would have Dooley, LeClair, and Logan. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, hard to argue that.
And that's what another story that came to mind, Brian, is I think we were playing Tulane and whatever the, you know, of course the umpires a lot of times, I mean, they're doing the entire series and they'll just rotate to the different positions. So the guy, maybe he had been over on first or behind the plate the previous night. And so I remember something happened and you said third base umpire who blew the call last night, one up, one down, and he just glared out toward left field.
Yeah, people definitely hear the things that we say, and umpires, you know, for the most part, they will they'll have a little fun with us at times too. It was one of the first sunny games we finally had this season, and the umpire was. He had took his hat off, and, well, he didn't have much hair on top. He was quite Mr. Clean. And so we started hollering at him, and so he would put his hat back on and pull it back off, put it back on, pull it off. And, you know, even they'll have a fun time with us. And then it takes – you just never know when it's going to happen, but it happens about once a season, whatever the umpire crew gets there, and they'll be all of a sudden – somebody from EC operations comes over and goes, the umpire said y'all can't have the megaphones over the fence anymore. And the first time they did that to us, we were very polite and we kept them back. But ever since that first time, they're like, heck with this. You know, it's just not as comfortable to have the megaphone. There's too many times that you lean forward and you hit the megaphone into your mouth. And you're like, oh, heck with that. I'd rather get kicked out than have that happen. Yeah.
But now, Brian, some of these projections, as we take a look at it, guys, I mean, who knows? And we'll see how things unfold here in a few days after the conference tournament on Selection Monday. But a lot of these projections are saying that NC State's going to be a 2 seed in Greenville.
Yeah.
So
count on it. Count on
you guys know like I do. You were talking about NC State earlier, and Avent's obviously been there for a long, long time now. It seems like every time they play the Pirates that he has a meltdown at least every couple times. So, you know, what would you guys think about the Wolfpack making that trip 90 miles east for the regionals?
Bring it. Bring it on.
That would be fine. We would have no problem with that. But I do know this. Last year, we were able to sneak the megaphones in for the regional and everything. And I promise you, if State comes to town, Avent will be the first one out there going, those things got to get out of here. And you can mark my words on that one. He will do whatever it takes. He'll be like, no way, this is a neutral site, blah, 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 blah. He'll have the NCAA officials, they got to go. But last year, everybody had a fun time with it. When we walked in, it was Ohio State playing South Carolina, and we just started cheering for both of them. That's the thing. We just have fun with it. And everybody was like, no problem at all. So.
Hey, Bubba, Dave, maybe we should start a poll on our Facebook page. Elliot Averett or Dave Doran, who's the bigger bitch?
I think it's going to be Doran. I'll go Doran, but
you go Doran. It's a close race. Close race.
Yeah,
I was not an anti. I will say I would until last year when you know they practice. They can't play the game, but then they practice at night and. And by the way, guys, you remember, you know who the head of the selection committee is. So, you know, his NC State ties, he'll put NC State there.
Ray Campbell.
Don't be so sure. Don't be so sure.
That may be the reason it doesn't happen.
Exactly. You can bet your butt, Dave, that State does not want to be a two seed in Greenville.
If there's anybody from State on the selection committee, they will not come to Greenville. I can guarantee you that part too.
It's Ray Tanner, the former NC State coach, former South Carolina coach, Ray Tanner, who's the current AD of South Carolina. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, Jeff Confer's good friend, Ray Tanner. Don't be surprised if it doesn't have the other effect, and NC State is not a two seed in Greenville.
It's gonna be
a lot of fun. I tell you what, this group, I'll put our team, win, lose or draw. I'll put this group we've had. It's one of the best teams, talented teams. 42 wins already. I mean, I would have never imagined we'd have 40 wins, so quickly.
Without playing the conference tournament.
Yeah.
The thing that's amazing to me is that we only lost one series all year, and that was to number one at UCLA. And
yeah, that's crazy thought.
Yeah.
That was competitive the whole time. I mean,
as
far as our, you know, number one and number three pitchers and just what the offense we have and the defense we can play, I mean, we can – in a series, anything goes. I mean we've shown that we've got a great team that's deep and that we're ready to compete, you know, at the highest level.
Now, with the recruiting classes that Cliff has been able to – Dan Rozelle and Jeff Alumba, I mean, those guys along with him and – it's amazing to see that, and I tell you what, it's going to pay off. Not only with this amazing team, I was saying this earlier with Corey in the podcast, Corey Glore, the fact that you think like this is a big time, like in other words, next year is going to be a down year, and you think the likes of Burles, I mean, all these guys, there's so many young guys that are on the team, that's like it's rebuilding. That's what's really special about Cliff Godwin and his staff.
Yeah, reloading, you know, to the point now where we got to reload instead of rebuild. Guys, I got a question for you. If we win the Supers, do we rush the field? Are we going to be the first baseball program to do like football?
And that would be cool.
Rush the field if we win the Supers.
It'll be the Guinness Book of World Records for the largest dog pile.
Largest dog pile. I mean, yeah.
Absolutely.
I'll be the first one over. It'll be like NC State when we played there in the Hurricane game against Miami. Yeah. Yeah, we'll be the first ones over the wall. Let's go.
Will you break the megaphones if they go to Omaha?
Oh, yes, definitely. Maybe. Megaphones will come.
As far as
if we can get them in or not, that's always a little tricky. But you know what? We'll just kill people with kindness, and we'll see what happens. When we played Carolina at Durham Bulls Athletic Park, we took the megaphones in there. We had a blast. So.
Yeah, I remember you were in the club level.
Yes, yeah.
Well, guys, I appreciate you coming on. I tell you what, it's been a huge honor, and it's always this project we're doing at the podcast with a sports objective. It's fun to finally put faces with names and stories, like we're saying, behind the how everything got started, traditions. And I was thinking about, again, like I said earlier, I was thinking about it yesterday. I was like, thank God we've got the guys, the men and women in the jungle, because that really – yeah, you don't want to be there. I don't like being at sporting events where people are sitting on their hands and everybody has to be so politically correct or polite. And the fact that you added, like, that was another thing I thought about. I'm glad you mentioned the fact that my son and daughter came with me yesterday, and I was not embarrassed about comments from the jungle, you know? They're 5 and 6 years old.
Yes. And I've got 4 kids of my own. Todd's got 2. You know, a lot of the people that we're hanging out with, yes, at one point we were college students as well, but even then we tried to do everything a little cleaner. But it's for love of the game and respect of the game.
Absolutely.
No doubt. Well, thank you guys for coming on. We know you've got day jobs and you came on with us here tonight. And definitely good luck to the Pirates this week. Hopefully we can be nice to not only in the regular season, conference tournament. That's the next check off the box. We'll see how it goes. But thank you guys for all that you do for out there in the jungle. And I'm hoping we can say Omaha coming next month.
And anytime you need to have us come on and talk about Pirate Athletics, we'll be here for you. Go Pirates.
Definitely. Go Pirates, definitely.
Well, guys, good luck to the Pirates this week. In fact, Bubba, I know we're going to promote some stuff real quick and get out of here, but I know Coach O is going to come. We're going to try to get him on, and we've got some other great guests this week, right?
Yeah, we do. We'll be catching up with Coach O. He's making the trip down to Clearwater. He doesn't always travel, but he is this time, and so we'll catch up with Coach O down in sunny Florida, or at least we hope. And nothing like last year with the weather and all the hardship that dealt the conference tournament. But so
no doubt.
Yeah, we'll enjoy catching up with him and getting his perspective not only on the Pirates and what needs to happen from someone who served as the head of the selection committee, and then also has been a site coordinator or site director for regionals for probably about 15 or 20 years now. So in addition to Coach O, we'll talk to Haley Outen, and she's an East Carolina alum. She played soccer for the Pirates, and she's with the American Digital Network, and she has been for years now. So they do a good job covering the games, and I'm sure a lot of Pirates will be tuning in on Facebook this week. In addition to the two of them, we'll catch up with some former Pirate baseball players. Of course, we talked to Daryl Lawhorn on our most recent episode, prior to this. So definitely go back and check that out. We'll talk to his brother, Trevor Lawhorn, this week, as well as some other former players, such as Pat Watkins from the Coach O era in the early 90s. Pat Watkins was a first-round draft pick. So a lot of great guests headed your way, and most of them at this point will have a baseball theme with all the excitement surrounding ECU baseball.
It's going to be fun, right, Kyle? I tell you what, this team is, I hate to overuse the word special, but they really are, and it's going to be interesting. You never know. That's what makes you nervous as a coach when you have a tournament, but yet that can also play in our favor as well.
Yeah, conference tournament's coming up. It's important. I don't think we have to win it to be a national seed, but might as well go on one thing and lock things up.
And leave no doubt. Speaking of no doubt, leave no doubt about being a national seed, Bubba. I tell you what, kudos to you. I know you've been working hard behind the scenes with everything going on with a lot of guests, and we've had a lot of shows here recently, but with everything going on with the baseball team and everything, we try to give as much coverage as we can. And how can folks, maybe we can put that up on social media, how can folks find out more about us as far as social media pages and where they can write a 5-star review?
Yeah, as far as social media, follow us on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ, on Instagram at The Sports Objective. Like and follow us on Facebook simply by searching The Sports Objective. And then follow us on YouTube. On our YouTube channel, we have multiple videos with Dowdy Ficklin's Southside Expansion Project. Have a new one from Saturday, May 18th. So definitely check that out. And then also, if you haven't seen the ones with Coach Houston where he's walking through Ward from a couple months ago, but some folks may not have seen those, check those out as Coach Houston goes into a lot of detail about his plans for that building and its hallways to honor and recognize ECU football history. But in addition to that, if you're listening to the show, all right, and you can listen on TuneIn, SoundCloud, Audio Boom, Blog Talk Radio, and Stitcher, Google Play Music, iTunes, pretty much anywhere you find podcasts, right. you can find our show. So wherever you listen, make sure you like us or favorite us on whatever that particular platform calls it. And write us a review, as Dave said. Give us 5 stars and let us know that you enjoy listening to the show. If you have a topic or a guest that you'd like to see us have on, or try to get on the show, reach out to us with our email at thesportsobj@gmail.com.
Well, and I'll tell you what's going to be an exciting week. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Bubba. Thanks to our great guest, Corey Glore. We had Brian and Todd as well from the jungle, the Megaphone guys. Appreciate them very much. Until next time, you've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.